It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And it is a couple of days after Thanksgiving. We're able to waddle out the side of the house today and get in the car and come out here live. Ate way too much, of course, and saved 4% doing it, right?
I guess so. This year,
that's what the experts say.
A little bit.
Yep. The turkey itself down 7%. The overall cost of Thanksgiving dinner down 4%. So if you're looking for a little light at the end of the COVID tunnel, perhaps that has something to do with it. But we have one that's even better. It's called the market.
The market has been good.
What are records made for?
To be broken.
Bingo. And it happened again.
Yeah, and it happened again on a very similar story. We had more good vaccine news breaking on Monday morning or Sunday night. And the this one's a bit more confusing. AstraZeneca and Oxford University combined to create another vaccine. It shows up to 90% effectiveness, but it's after two doses. 62% effective after one dose. And so as it has been the last 2 weeks, this news propelled the market higher, with the Dow closing over 30,000 for the first time ever before pulling back a little bit to end the week. The Thanksgiving trading week has historically been really light on volume due to vacation. So we'll see what the real action is on Monday when everyone returns from being off work. Not as many people traveling this year, but it's still people taking off for the holidays, I'm sure.
I have a quick little anecdote.
Sure.
Back in 2008, Jeffrey James of CBS News published his, quote, 10 worst business books of all time. You know what number five was?
Dow 30,000.
Nice guess. The guy's name is Robert Zaccaro. He released the first copy in 2001 and then released another one right before the stuff hit the fan in 08.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what prompted James. Instead of 30,000, he said, we're lucky we didn't see 3,000. But what did I say earlier this year?
We could see it.
Yep. I didn't promise it would be in this calendar year, but it was coming and coming soon. That was based on some things that haven't come true yet. But anyway, I thought that was cute. Fifth worst business book of all times. And what happened this week? Twice. We closed above 30,000.
Yep. So that was interesting. It's very psychologically interesting, but it really is pretty meaningless.
Yeah. How many times we're going to have to go over it to stay over it? Nobody knows.
Who knows? But it is one of those barriers that, you know, we've never seen before, and it makes it interesting to see that we got there, especially in light of the current world conditions, I guess. So valuations had been coming back towards the neutral range after a couple of weeks of consolidation, but now they've been pushed a little bit higher up into the overvalued range again. And the NASDAQ is, just to give you an example, the NASDAQ is now up 36% for the year, and is more than 24% higher than its previous peak in February, which was prior to coronavirus. Yep. So I'm not sure that makes a lot of sense. 24% higher than we were in February after the worst pandemic we've seen in this century.
It makes a lot of dollars, even if it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that it does. I'm not complaining per se, but it just kind of makes you stop and think.
Yeah, that we're definitely taking a cautious wait-and-see approach.
Yeah, for sure.
We're not out of the market, but most of us have accumulated some cash on the side that's wait-and-see cash. We fully intend, once everything settles down, to get in with our marginal money, but we don't know how yet because we don't have the answers to all of our questions yet.
No, but there's a lot of exuberance out there. Whether it's irrational or not, I'm not sure.
Yep. I tend to lean a little left of center on that one.
The Dow, which was still negative for the year during our show on November 7th, which was not that long ago, that was about 3 weeks ago, is now up more than 22% for the year and up 2% from its February peak. The S&P is a similar story, up 29% this year and up 7.5% from the February peak. So if those numbers sound a bit elevated, it's because they are. And that's a little scary to me.
It's very scary to me.
We mentioned Bitcoin last week, and it was timely because after hitting a 52-week high at $19,495 this week, the cryptocurrency ran out of buyers and came crashing down hard, dropping more than 14% into correction territory.
Yeah.
This most recent tumble came on the rumor that the Treasury Department may start to require financial institutions like Coinbase and its competitors to verify the receipt or owner of all wallets before sending currency to that wallet. So you would basically know who you were sending money to, and not just you would know it, but the U.S. Treasury Department would also know it. And if you have listened to the show for a while, we may have warned about that about 100 times.
I seem to remember about 99 of them. We'll call today the 100th. What's missing in the Bitcoin transaction is the taxes.
Yeah, and the government does not like when large amounts of money change hands that should be taxable that are not.
Or even the SARs, the suspicious activity reports. If you get over $10,000, they want to see why.
Yep.
And they can't see it on Bitcoin, and they're not going to sit still and just let it happen.
And so the anonymous nature of the cryptocurrency is what makes it attractive for many people, and that may be going away. So that would not be good news for Bitcoin, as evidenced by the rather large drop. And then also that combined with the volatile nature of the cryptocurrency is why we're not really involved with it.
Right.
Just something that's supposed to be a store of value shouldn't drop 14% in a couple
plus
days.
Plus, they've announced that they're increasing the quantity available now, Bitcoin, doing essentially another printing, which could dilute the demand or increase the supply, either which would decrease the value of it. So there's a lot of headwinds for Bitcoin right now.
Yep. Speaking of headwinds, gold and silver slid pretty hard this week.
Yeah, even though the dollar's dropping hard.
Yeah, gold dropped 4.6% and silver was down 6.4%. So
that's nonsensical
drop. Bonds held up much better than metals, posting a 0.3% drop for the week. That was on AGG, the ETF that does the total bond market.
Right.
Money was definitely flowing towards risk assets more than the safe havens this week. International stocks rallied along with domestic. The international ETF VXUS was up more than 2% on the week, and Asian markets in particular had a very good week with Japan, India, and Singapore all up more than that 2%, and South Korea seeing a gain of more than 4%. So really strong week across the world.
Yeah, and you can ask, as we do so often, why?
Vaccine,
that's
I think.
It. That's it. I mean, if we can get rid of this thing, it's going to be good for everybody, obviously.
For a short week, there was a ton of economic data released. The first revision to GDP came in unchanged for the third quarter, showing that same remarkable 33.1% annual growth rate. For quarter three, that matched expectations. Business and residential investments were revised upward, while inventories, personal consumption, government spending, and net exports were revised lower. The real meat of the report was that it showed corporate profits rose 27.1% in the third quarter and hit an all-time high. So if you're looking for a reason that the stock market is rising during a pandemic, look no further than that. Profits are now up 3.3% versus a year ago.
And this one I heard this morning, in the second quarter of next year, the market is pricing in an increase of corporate profits of 44%.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, if that's right, the market is undervalued.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a little too high, the market is fairly valued. And if it's too low, there's some other things that could happen.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, that I thought that's somewhere on the scale of outrageous. And what could possibly be in these forecasters' heads to think that the corporations are going to increase 44% in profit when they're probably facing a headwind on taxes? That's strange.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. All right, well, got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And it occurred to me during the break that we were so excited to get into the market itself, I didn't really properly welcome everyone. So welcome, everyone, to the usual gang, so to speak, our loyal listeners. Thanks for always being here. We do this partly, mostly, for you, and then, of course, if you're new to the show by accident or on purpose, try to listen for the whole hour. You probably learn a few things, and I'd almost guarantee you'll have a little fun doing it anyway, so shame on me for that. Meanwhile, we'll talk about what we want to talk about, unless you care to change the subject, and all you have to do is pick up the phone, dial 904-222-8255, or 222 talk, and we will immediately put you on, and we'll see what you've got on your mind today. There is a trivia question, as usual, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. We talk a lot about things like Social Security, taxes, you know, financial things. And I'm going to be doing a lot on taxes because tax season might be April, but tax planning season is definitely December. This is when you start really paying attention to what's going to happen for the year. But it's also a time when we're getting our annual IRS changes, meaning how much more Social Security might you get, how much, what are the tax brackets, or any of those things that they start to release. And I got my Social Security notice, and my increase this year was a minus 8.5%.
Wow, that's
pretty good, huh?
Really good?
Yeah, but I'm going to talk about why when we get into it, which will probably be in the second half of the show. And it's really important because a lot of people are going to find themselves in the same situation that they put me in, although I am not there.
Mm-hmm.
But what, how you undo something like that is very specific, and it's not difficult. It's just specific. So anyway, speaking of inflation and Social Security, which falls behind, as we know, more and more every year, over the last 10 years, what has been the single item that affects seniors that has inflated the most? And it's a specific cost that almost all of us of a certain age, shall I say, are impacted with. So if you can guess it, you'll be the big winner. And it might, to some people, seem obvious, but I don't think in general you're gonna think of it that way. So anyway, let's see. Got the trivia question out. Got that. Let's wrap up a little on the market.
Yep.
Especially wanted to mention the topic of housing.
Yeah, I want to get there, but there's one other thing I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
In the not-so-good news, personal income fell 0.7% in October.
Duh.
Well, personal consumption grew by 0.5%, mm-hmm. So typical America.
Negative savings, which is a reversal of the whole year.
Yeah, that's right. These numbers don't make a lot of sense unless people are very optimistic about getting their jobs back sooner rather than later. So they're spending on credit to that they intend to pay off when they get their job back in a month or two.
Yep.
That's what it looks like. The good news in this report is that if you strip out government transfer payments, unemployment, mm-hmm. from the report, the personal income rose 0.8% during the month, meaning that people who are working are still doing quite well.
Good.
And the we just need to get the rest of the people who are still unemployed back to work and get back to pre-pandemic levels of employment. So hopefully we can achieve that once the economies in certain states are allowed to open again. We shall see.
Or when there's enough protests of certain governors that are putting lids on all this stuff.
Oh, like the one who just got nominated for Time Person of the Year.
Yeah, and the one who within 1 hour of basically shutting down his city flew to Mississippi.
Yeah.
Sad. But there are always people who want to fight back a little bit. There's a lady by the name of Lauren, either Boebert or Baybert, I'm not sure, recently elected. And she was having some people over, and it was probably going to be in excess of what the rules were. So she scheduled a different event, and it happened to coincide with the Thanksgiving dinner. She declared a funeral for a deceased turkey. I'm not making this up.
Wow.
And she held the ceremony before they ate said deceased turkey, and all is well. Don't you love American creativity?
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a in-your-face response to those people who need it. And man, do they need it these days.
It's really unbelievable. But yeah. Let's get back to housing.
Yep.
Despite the smaller number than last month on the headline number, new single-family home sales actually came in strong in October. The headline number decreased 0.3%, but it beat expectations, and September was revised up by 43,000, which actually, ooh, if they added those to last month, that would have been a significant increase.
Okay.
New home sales, get this, are up more than 29.1% from their January pre-pandemic high. 29.1%. Yeah. Isn't that remarkable?
Wee.
And the sales aren't the only thing that have been increasing. Home prices have been increasing as well, in some cases by a lot. The year-over-year changes are led by Phoenix, which is up 11.44%. Seattle's up over 10%. And in some of the local ones, Tampa is up 7.5%, and Miami is up 5.6%. That's just over last year. The average nationally is for the year is up just under 7%, and just in the last month, up over 1.2%.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. If you look at the change from the housing crash lows, so think 2010, 2011, when things were really bad, rock bottom, if you will. San Francisco is now up more than 140% from there.
Oh.
Yeah, followed closely by Vegas at 128%. Tampa's up 93%. Miami's up 89%. Nationally, the average is about 69%. And then if you sort of look at the flip side of that, the change from the previous highs during the bubble, so think 2008, 2007, 2008, Denver leads the way. It's up 69% from its bubble high. Then Dallas up 60%. Actually, it's remarkable. All of these are big liberal cities. San Francisco, Charlotte, that one not really, but Boston, Portland, Seattle, Dallas, Denver. So big, yeah.
Those trends will be reversing if nothing else happens.
And this is,
people are moving out of those places.
This is really interesting. Tampa is up 0%. It's right at its pre-housing bubble high, and Miami's still 8% under.
Hmm.
And I give you Tampa and Miami instead of Jacksonville because they're in the top 20 cities that are in the composite that Case-Shiller looks at.
But Tampa's never been a wildly fluctuating market except for the bad times that you got stuck in.
Yeah.
That was a wild fluctuation.
I moved to Tampa in 2007. So, yeah.
Just got a really good deal on a really nice house.
And then it dropped in half. So, yeah. It was awful. But yeah. I didn't know what was coming. There's nothing I could do.
Yeah, when we talk about what's likely and what's unlikely to happen, I have long felt like that was the time for my lifetime anyway, and hopefully for yours, that we'll never see anything quite that bad again.
Yeah, that was a series of events that all just came together at one moment, and it would be highly unlikely we would see that again.
Well, if history repeats itself, it'd be 80 years or better.
Yeah, but that is also not to say that the housing market won't come down at some point, because it does sometimes come down. Well, prices do come down. There are such things as buyer's markets, and we haven't seen one in a while.
Well, the inventories are low right now, and they're not growing yet. That's why the industry itself, the building industry and remodeling industry, are both going gangbusters.
Yes, definitely. It's hard to find a good contractor right now.
It really is.
Yeah, in any of the skilled trades are very, very busy. It's a good time to be in that business.
It certainly is. I hope these people remember that and put some money away waiting for it. But that's not our problem. It's just our suggestion, right?
Definitely. And then one of the things driving that is that the state of Florida's unemployment number is coming down. Mm-hmm. It came down to 6.5%, down from 7.2% in September. Jacksonville actually ticked up a little bit, but it was marginal, and the overall rate for Florida is still on the way down. I think if you look at the trend, Jacksonville is actually beating it a little bit. And I wouldn't be too concerned over a one-month number.
No, even though we're not a huge city as cities go, we're a very desirable city as cities go.
Yeah, so we're actually at 5.6%, and that's up from 5.4% in the previous month. So really not too bad.
That sounds to me like it might be sustainable.
Yep, and St. John's County, even better, it actually ticked down to 3.7% from 3.8%. So really? St. John's doing really well.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think Angela was saying this in the last hour, something about Northeast Florida being such a great place to live, and she'll get no argument from me on that one. That's
nope.
For sure.
We've always been big proponents of the area, and as is Angela.
Yep. Well, a couple of quick headlines. These fall into the "oh really" category, as most of my headlines do. From our friends at Yahoo Finance this week, COVID-19 resurgence has brought U.S. economy back from the brink.
Wait, what?
COVID-19 resurgence has brought U.S. economy back from the brink.
That doesn't make a bit of sense.
Well, you know what's interesting? I read the whole article, and it didn't say anything of the sort. It was the exact opposite. Some of those headline writers, you know. And then from our other really good friends at Money and Markets, tech stocks to drop 92%.
Uh-oh.
And from Goldman Sachs was the other one about the resurgence. They actually got it exactly right. It's good for them. All right, got to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
And I want to remind everybody the trivia question is still out there. We know that Social Security does a very bad job of keeping up with the rate of inflation. Over the last 10 years, several things have risen faster than our Social Security checks. What was the number one item that affects people's Social Security age over the past 10 years? What was the biggest, I guess, underpayment or the biggest growth above what we received in our COLAs?
What had the highest rate of inflation?
Highest,
the item
yeah,
had
exactly.
The highest rate of inflation.
More in excess than anything else of that. So that's the item, and it's fairly specific. In fact, it's actually quite specific. Well, I was talking at the end of last week about things like RMDs, and I said I had more to do, and I wanted to develop a computer program, or as Adam calls it, an Excel spreadsheet. It's the same thing. You just got a better tool to do it and see what the impact is. And this all came about. I ignored CARES, so I started at the end of this year. Now, under the CARES Act, none of us had to take RMDs this year. So I'm starting that as if this is the baseline. The other assumption I made was that the return on your investment funds, your retirement accounts basically, would be an annual 5%, very modest, I thought. And I started at 6, Adam said, take it down a little bit more just to show the impact. And I did, and I liked it. So I've entered several different scenarios of what would happen if you were 70 right now, or 72 right now, or 75. Or then I overlaid on that the SECURE Act, which we now refer to as SECURE 1.0, which raised the RMD age from 70 and a half to 72. Now, frankly, we've never had any clue how they arrived at 70 and a half.
Yeah, and it made things so complicated.
It
because
did.
Then your RMD age was actually based on your birthday.
Yep.
And where it fell during the year. And it just made things really complicated, unnecessarily.
And some things, it's very important because there are things in that tax code that require age 70 and a half, and they don't mean the day before you turn 7 and a half. There might be a penalty for that one. I'm coming up on some more of that talk today too. But anyway, it's now 72. They didn't change everything, but they changed that. And now there's a proposal that's being referred to in Congress as SECURE 2.0. Now, if that were to pass, it would raise the RMD age to 75. So how much difference does that make? This was interesting. Under the old rules, you might say the 2019 rules, if you had a $100,000 account, I made the assumption that all of these started at $100,000. After taking the RMDs and getting the growth, you would have $105,000. So it goes up a little over time, which is what we always tell clients. If everything works out right, you'll wind up with more money than you've had before. But then I entered in and accounted for the SECURE Act 1.0, raising it to 72, and at the end of 5 years, that changed it to 113,000. Definitely a good thing. But then I added in SECURE Act 2.0. So if they raise it to 75, that amounts to 134,000.
Nice.
Now, think about somebody with 400,000, 500,000, 600,000, or a million. You're talking about a lot of money.
You are.
Especially because that growth is tax-free. But then,
well, tax deferred.
Tax deferred, excuse me. Well, unless it's a Roth.
Right.
But then,
well, there's no RMDs in a Roth, so that wouldn't be.
Exactly true. Well, unless it's inherited. So there you go, this can go around and around. But anyway, you're right. So then there's another provision that came into play where if you're still working, you can make contributions. even though you're over 70 and a half. That's pretty cool. All right, I'll be right back to this one after. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Same to you.
Okay. I'm going to give a try at the trivia question.
Okay.
I'm going to say healthcare costs.
You are in the ballpark, but I need it more specific.
More specific yep. than healthcare costs.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about retirees.
Yep.
So.
For retirees. Okay. Cost for Medicare and Medicaid?
Bing, 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 bing.
Yeah.
You, sir, are the winner. The correct answer, if you want to be really specific, is Medicare Part B. Do you want to know by how much it exceeded the Social Security increases?
Interesting. I'm going to say, let's see, based on mine, maybe. Oh, I'll just take a guess at
22%. 149%.
There you go.
In excess of our increases.
So the government passed on increases to...
Of 195%.
Right.
The actual increases, we got a 46% increase in our Social Security checks, and that leaves a gap of 149% on a mandatory program.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Now that
it is unbelievable.
That it, well, it would be if it were any other entity in the world except the federal government. That's my particular feeling about it. But anyway, you nailed it, my friend, and that's wonderful.
Well done.
Yep.
I appreciate it very much. I wouldn't be surprised. My last two trips briefly to an emergency room in Memorial, they have an annex on Atlantic and Kernan Boulevard,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just amazed. I have to... There's nothing good about getting old, except for the fact that they do give us Medicare, because when I see the charges from the hospital, the itemized charges, they're unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
You're almost exactly right. They don't give it to us. They sell it to us.
Yeah.
And they do it mandatorily.
It's something you pay for.
Yep. But, yes, well done. I'm going to put you on hold, and Alan will get your name and address, and we'll send you a little something from Mr. Bales.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, and keep up the great work.
Thanks the call.
Mike.
That was well done.
It was not surprising, I guess, to hear that was the answer.
I've got the whole list. I don't know if I can find it. Maybe I'll find it in the next break. But that was the big one. And, man, you look at that. We're supposed to absorb 149% extra. That brings me around to the topic. That phone call was just extraordinarily well-placed. I got my 1.3% increase notification for Social Security, and I looked at the net between this year and next year, and it's down about 8.5%. So, of course, I do what I do, and I dig in and try to figure out why. And it's my old buddy Irma. Remember her, don't you?
Can't stand her.
I-R-M-A-A. Irma. It's the income-related monthly adjustment amount, meaning how much more are they going to charge me for Medicare, Part B, and for Part D, which I don't even have. Irma, you're going to pay Irma no matter what if your income is high enough. So looking at it, I realize I've told the story on the radio before that they had IRS had made a mistake, which actually went back to a 1099 that was wrong, so it wasn't really their problem. I did get it corrected, so I took care of that last year, but they went right back and ignored the correction from before. So they had my income level too high, and, of course, without a required minimum distribution this year, that helped too. But because of that, I have to correct them. And you correct them using a form called SA-44. What that says, it's called a life-changing event letter. It's published online at the IRS, and if you know about it, you can go get it. But they're not going to tell you about it. What happens every year is a lot of people experience a dramatic cut in pay. It's called retirement. So they go into, you think about the numbers. 10,000 people a day turn 65, which means 10,000 people a day on average are going to join Social Security and Medicare. Now, 10,000 a day is a lot of people. And those people are not being told as they retire to look at the numbers from Social Security and Medicare. So hardly anybody that we talk to has a clue what they're paying for Medicare. They know what their Social Security is on the deposit. But the withholding happens before that, and the withholding is for the premium for Part B, the premium for D, if you have D, and the IRMA charges, which apply to both Part B and Part D, whether or not you take it. And I've got more to say about this, too. But you can change that if you can show that your adjusted gross income is going to fall and the brackets are listed online. If you can show them that it's going to fall, they will actually go back and adjust that. And they will do it. I have done it myself, and I've had several clients do it. And it's really a godsend. More on the other side. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banway Financial Hour.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with a computerized Wave ventilation unit. Wave ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins that are trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. Wave ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty or filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars each year in energy costs.
I recently installed a unit and was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. Now, the smell is finally gone.
Say goodbye to your dehumidifier and get a Wave unit for your home.
For free information, go to dryhousenow.com or call 888-964-WAVE. Satisfaction guaranteed. Just go to dryhousenow.com or call 888-964-WAVE.
Wave Home Solutions for a healthy, comfortable home.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home, and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Call now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alert, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Call right now and you'll also get 6 free sensors. That's 6 points of protection for free. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-888-987-3232. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-888-987-3232. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Total package includes 6 door window sensors. Labor charges may apply. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and Protect Your Home license numbers. Call now, 1-888-987-3232.
Does your roof need replacing, your house need cleaning, or maybe you're ready to update your kitchen? Big or small, whatever your home improvement need, now it's easy to find the right home pro for your project. Log on to home.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to pre-screened remodelers, maids, handymen, roofers, and many other home contractors. Just go to home.servicemagic.com. Service Magic has a network of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. If you need a painter, electrician, plumber, or any other home service, visit home.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to home.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to home.servicemagic.com. That's home.servicemagic.com.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have had a winner on our trivia question that always makes me happy. You know, we're spending Ken's money, so what does it matter, right? He's such a nice guy. Anyway, what do you do at year end? Well, there's quite a lot of things that you've got to watch for now. And we'll be talking more and more about taxes and over the next few shows because December 31 is coming up. And there are some things, once you have, say, missed the opportunity, cannot be redone. So some things to think about And I, some of these I've told you before, but not everybody listens to everything. And just a moment. Good morning, Bob.
Steve, pain that happened to me too.
Really?
Yeah. And what the problem is, when they calculate these things, they use a 2-year-old tax form.
Precisely.
When they tax this, so they're looking at income 2 years ago, mm-hmm. not what happened last year with a life-changing event.
Right.
Mine happened to happen during the COVID shutdown when the government was trying to figure out how they were going to operate. Mm-hmm. And they took the extra money out for months and months and months and months and months and months and months, and months before I could get it solved.
No, they won't go back that many months.
Oh, I know. But I was proactive and sent them emails and filled out the form, went online and filled out the form.
Mm-hmm.
So that had put the brakes. The faster you put the brakes on it, the better chance you are of, or the faster you notify them, the better chance you are of having it resolved in your favor.
Absolutely.
And they did resolve it in my favor.
Good.
But anyhow, I feel your pain. It happened to me. And my wife just retired, and they tried to do the same thing to her this year based on two years' income. I'll go.
And
I'll
like
let you guys go.
That's good, but I just wanted to make that one more comment. It's just like we've all said. It's up to you to do this. They're not going to come to you with
it. Oh, no, and they're not going to tell you about the form or anything else.
Nope, so, absolutely not.
It's shooting in the blind.
Well, I appreciate it because there's a rumor on the street that no one ever wins these things, and it's absolutely not true.
No, the faster you take action, the better chance you are having a result because they go back to when that form's turned in.
Yep, perfect.
All right.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. No.
That is 100% spot on information right there.
Yep.
But in order to do it, you have to go into your Social Security account and look at what they're charging you.
Yep. And we recently had a client do it, and he told his accountant what he was trying to do. That'll never work. And it worked.
Yeah.
There's
nothing wrong with using the tools that they give you. You know, people are afraid, far too afraid of the government oftentimes. And you see this IRS logo on an envelope in your mailbox when you pick up the stack, and everybody cringes, and mm-hmm. that's absolutely true. But generally speaking, those communications are very perfunctory. You either say, yes, I agree, pen a little check and send it in and it's over, or you say, no, that's not right. How do I correct this?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a major source of overpayment from older Americans just at the time of their lives when they don't need any excess expenses month to month. So SA-44, but you got to check and see what bracket your tax return either last year, or they allow you to estimate it for this year. And if you're wrong, then of course you're going to owe them money. And the way they get that back, by the way, they charge you, and they start by not giving you your Social Security check in January if you owe them money, and they don't give you one until you're all paid up. So it's not like it's spread out over 12 months or anything. So don't be shocked. If you're going to estimate your income this year, try to be really accurate. And if it's on the margin, then you better be even more accurate, or you might get penalized. But anyway, the SA-44 does work. And when your own accountants are saying nobody wins these things, don't listen. Listen to the show, read the website. It's right there. You have to have documentation, in some cases a check stub or whatever. But if you are telling the truth and you can document it, you can win. And we're talking hundreds of dollars. I hesitate to tell you how much money off they were. I'll tell you anyway. $1,000 a month they were off.
That's crazy.
Isn't it? So both forms were sent into the department 2 or 3 days ago, and I'm anticipating hearing the good news back from them, or I'll keep fighting, because that is ridiculous and outrageous. All right, now on more fun things. For this year only, aside from no RMDs, it's always good news, the $300 charitable deduction. Anyone who does routinely make charitable donations, most of you know that you're not itemizing your taxes anymore. So your charitable deductions get lost in the standard deduction. So there's no added benefit to making these contributions anymore. And IRS realizes that, and it's especially true during hard times when the charity might be the thing that you drop off your must-do list. So for this year only, they have made a $300 exception. Anyone who issues a check for $300 to a qualified charitable organization, and by qualified I mean IRS acceptable, and there's a publication, I think 526 or something like that, on the IRS website that just lists all the charities. You are allowed to take that, not as a deduction separately, but a top line reduction of your income. That is money directly into your pocket. So if you are in any way, shape, or form considering giving money, even if it's from an IRA, make sure that $300 is not from your IRA. Make sure you have documented it. Make sure you get a receipt for it. And that will reduce your personal income. And that is just a really, really good deal. Now, another thing that happened, we were talking about this earlier, was that the 70 and a half age for required minimums was raised to 72. And some people are familiar with, and you've heard us talk about, the QCDs, the Qualified Charitable Distributions. That's where you pay a charitable contribution from directly from your IRA. And what that does is it avoids your tax form, basically. So you don't itemize deductions and lose them to your big standard deduction. So it just sends it directly to the charity, and it's qualified. You do not get a 1099 for that amount, and it's wonderful. Well, there was some confusion as to what it meant, because you used to have to be 70 and a half, and I mean 70 and a half. My birthday, for instance, is June 28th. I'm 70 and a half on December 28th. I don't think there's time to do that. I would have to send in the request on my birthday, get it back, get it to the charity in time for them to get it deposited in a receipt that comes back. So don't try to do it if your birthday is ahead and you haven't quite reached 70 and a half yet. But at your 70 and a half birthday, you can make these qualified charitable distributions. The work has to be done by you. You have to identify the charity, make sure it's qualified, and get their tax number. Get it to them in time to process and send you a receipt from it. Keep those receipts, because you could get examined on that one. But if you do it right, it's very fine. So anyway, that's something everyone should know. There's also a rumor, not even a proposal, that the $300, which now goes to a taxpayer, and I'll tell you what a taxpayer means. A taxpayer is either an individual or a couple who are filing jointly. So each couple right now that files jointly only gets $300, not six. There is a rumor that some people are trying to change that. You know, the little tweaks that IRS does in December right before they go home for another of their many, many vacations in the year. They might try to sneak that in, and if so, you will know real well. And by the way, I found the publication number. It is publication 526, lists all the qualified charities. Now, that's something you can still do. And the other thing that's really important, and I think I'm going to, is kind of complex to really go through it. The mutual fund buying a dividend problem. Mutual funds have to distribute their income, their capital gains, and so on annually. It's the cost of doing business. When you're a mutual fund company, you have to do it. So you don't want to pay taxes on that if you own it in a taxable account, unless you actually have to. And what can happen to people, for instance, they could buy into a mutual fund today, and in a week or two, they do a distribution, which doesn't come out of there. It gets reinvested in new shares, and surprise, surprise, your 1099 comes out and shows a big hunk of income that you didn't have any idea was going to happen to you, and it's taxable. I'll get into the hows and the whys, but basically any mutual funds from here to the end of the year that you're considering buying, go to their websites first and make sure what their distribution date is, and if it's going to be bought in a taxable account, don't do it. Much more on this next week. I'll make it my main topic. Well, I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you again same time next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.